Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. This is episode 111. My name is Simon Dell, your host. Thank you very much for listening in. Now, this is probably one of the most fascinating interviews. One of the most fascinating products that I've interviewed anybody about in all of my 111 episodes. I'm going to ask you, before you listen to this, to go and have a quick look at a website. It is www, of course, sirencameras.com, S-I-R-E-N, sirencameras.com. If you are into fishing, you will probably think this is the best thing that you've ever seen in your life, other than a really big fish at the end of your fishing line. But this probably comes in a close second to that. If you're not into fishing, it is still an amazing story of innovation, creative innovation, and creating a potential marketplace out of something that just simply nobody had any idea about. All I can do is say to you to go and look at the website. It is a camera that you probably won't believe can exist. And it's been made and created in Queensland, Australia by a couple of guys, or a group of guys. It has got huge demand for it already. It's not even been made yet. And we're going to talk to one of the inventors, a guy called Phil West, about his story about getting this product to market. It is, as I say, fascinating. I think it's an absolutely fascinating journey, and I think you will really enjoy listening to it. Before we do that, before we jump into that, the usual announcements, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to this podcast. If you do want to do your own podcast or any sort of audio recording, let's go and talk to thepodcastboss.com. Gilberto will help you out there. And finally, come and find out a little bit more about us, www.cemoh.com, C-E-M-O-H.com. We are Australia's only labour hire marketing agency. We recruit really, really good marketers and then hire them back to you so that you can use them. That's pretty much what we do. We've been doing that for about 9 months, growing at a fantastic rate of knots. And if you feel that that's something that your business needs, then please come and talk to us. You can contact me, simon@cemoh.com. I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram and TikTok. Come and watch some of our cool TikTok videos that we've been doing. Ask Cemo is our handle. We've got some great pieces on there. We do some series about great Australian brands. And maybe one day soon, the Siren cameras will become one of those great Australian brands. What a segue that was. You notice how I did that. God. I've impressed myself there. Anyway, please enjoy this interview with Phil West from Siren Cameras. So welcome to the Cemo Marketing Podcast, Phil West from Siren Cameras. How are you?
Doing great this morning, Simon. It's Friday, so looking forward to the weekend.
Friday, as my 4.5-year-old keeps calling it now after having been taught that by his teacher. So let's give everyone a little bit of your background, of your history. The observant among us have realized that you have a Scottish accent. You've come from a very, very cold place. You now live in a very, very warm place. Give us the Phil West history. How did you get here?
Yeah, no problem. So you're right. And I'm observed correctly. I am from the northeast of Scotland, more north than east, I would say. And it's a place where, the few nice days that you get during the year are certainly enjoyed. But sometimes those are few and far between. So that area is also the, I guess, oil capital of Europe. It gets kind of branded that. So that's how my career started in the energy industry. Fast forward 15 years, and there's a bit of that in Brisbane. There's a fair bit of gas exploration that happens here. So over I came about 2012 with my spouse, and thinking it would just be for the duration of some of the projects that were happening here. But just found that I enjoyed it so much and along came kids and houses and all of that good stuff. And so routes went down and we're not moving. We don't intend to go anywhere foreseeable. So that's professionally. And then hand in hand with that was growing up literally right on the ocean in Scotland. And that ingrained in me a real kind of deep passion for fishing and the outdoors. And then finding myself eventually in Australia with Moreton Bay just on the doorstep there, just enhanced that. And that's been a constant passion of mine, the whole recreational fishing scene, if you like. And not only that's what's behind the startup that that we're running.
So let's sort of quickly talk about that. Obviously, we're not here to talk about oil and gas as you know, as much as many people might want us to. We're here to talk about cameras and fishing. So yeah. Siren Cameras is the startup, S-I-R-E-N, cameras.com. So yeah, obviously recommend everyone goes and has a quick look at that. Tell me, so let's talk about the fishing first. You clearly, that was a passion for you in Scotland. It's been a passion here. Where did the idea come from? Where did all of a sudden you go from, you know, just spending your time fishing to starting to build a camera?
Yeah, I can remember the day. So coming here and getting myself offshore into Australian waters, it's like night and day, right? You might as well start again in terms of understanding what to do and how to catch fish, et cetera, et cetera. So I made an incredible amount of mistakes in the first few years here, going offshore and attempting to catch fish, and spent some money doing it as well. And then slowly it started to come together. And I remember the day that we'd spent literally the entire day offshore and I had one fish. I'd hooked up to one amazing fish for probably 15, 20 minutes. I didn't get to see what it was and it eventually snapped the line, it bust off, and then nothing else for the rest of the day. And on the way home, really quite disappointed and wondering if this is all worth it, I was just thinking to myself, right, well, you know, if we had a unit that I could put onto the line that actually went subsurface and filled what was on the end and then somehow became buoyant and returned, so if the line snaps, you actually get it back, then that would be really cool. Had a look around about the internet for something like that, it didn't exist. Started playing around with some very, very basic prototypes, and then understood how difficult it is to actually engineer something that sinks and then returns. So as we were playing some of those early prototypes and looking at this unit floating on the surface, filming down the line, the light bulb moment was, well, let's put a second camera on the back of it, filming back up the line, and forget making it sink. Just have it sitting on the surface, filming down and also filming up. So therefore, we can effectively document the entire experience.
Okay, so take a step back there. You said you started tinkering around with creating your own kind of your own camera. Was that you actually doing that? You kind of working on the electronics, or you finding someone else to try and do that for you?
Yeah, those early prototypes, no, it was more, it's certainly not the electronics. That was more the physics I was working on, i.e. how do you make something sink and then return? So it was very much physics to begin with. And then we've then progressed from there after it became more than just an idea to really engaging some very talented people, some very talented individuals to generate the electronics that we need for this product. And there's no shying away from it that it needs a team of, you know, multi-skilled people to deliver this, because you're mixing electronics with water, with physics, et cetera. It's a pretty complex unit.
So obviously you've got the idea, you're playing around with the electronics, or you're playing around with the physics. Callum's your co-founder. How did he kind of fit into the picture?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think Callum would mind me saying that I'm the one with driving enthusiasm for fishing. Callum's more interested in that electronic piece into the tech side. And at the time, he could see the excitement in me, you know, around about this idea. And he was looking for something to kind of, you know, put some money into and interest him as well. And so we're brothers-in-law and we got on extremely well. So over a beer a couple of years ago, we said, you know what, let's do this. And I'm so glad that he was willing to do that, because at that time, you know, I was underestimating, you know, what this actually cost to give it a chance, to give it some runway. I probably wouldn't have taken that risk myself, but the two of us together, then, you know, we've been able to give it a bit of a push, and then it's gained momentum from there, i.e. we've landed patents, we've landed trademarks, we've landed a government grant to help us as well, which has just been fundamental and really gives us the fuel, if you like, to give it a chance.
And we haven't really kind of spoken about the actual features. So, you know, I'm hoping everyone who's watching this or listening to this has already gone to have a look at actually what it is. But kind of describe it in a nutshell, because it's essentially a dual facing camera, isn't it? But yeah. It's kind of a lot more than that.
It is, yeah. I made it earlier.
there
yeah,
you go.
Exactly that. If I can show that to the camera, there's one lens and then the second lens. So yeah, it's a dual facing camera, but what it does is allows us to attach it to the line very, very quickly through its trigger mechanism. I just squeeze that and put it onto the line and then let it go.
Right.
So effectively you only use it once there's a fish on the line. So you're uninterrupted. There goes the fish. There goes the camera. You let it go. It can't come off the line and it'll just slide down and sit on the surface with one lens penetrating the surface and shooting down and the other lens actually shooting back at the angler, at the boat per se. And then the beauty about it is, like I've mentioned a couple of times, if that line snaps, it just runs through the body of the camera and leaves your camera on the surface. And then from a technical perspective, the smarts in the unit is actually allowing it to record the day and the time that it's being used, its GPS location, the water temperature, and then in time, it's not there yet, but in time, I'm going to use AI to identify fish species on this.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty smart. And in terms of how you get the footage off that, is it plug it into a USB later on, or what's the...
Yeah, right now, Simon, is we're going to plug into USB. So you'll be viewing that on your computer, and that's certainly what the prototypes are all designed around. And then, you know, assuming we get the success I'm planning to get from this, then there'll be an app developed so you can actually watch it real time or pull off that information as you require it. That's from like a personal perspective. So that's like the angler, that's the kind of attraction to the offering. But then behind the scenes, I've got, if you imagine, let's say over this weekend that, you know, 1,000 of these are used up and down the Queensland coast, I've got some pretty big intentions for the data collection as well. There's a real issue right now across the globe with conservation groups actually looking for the kind of information they need to manage fish stocks.
Yeah.
And you just can't get it because that information transfer isn't there. And I plan to try to do something about that.
I would imagine taking it to the nth degree that, you know, if the system is there, if those, you know, the camera connects to a phone and the phone can connect to, you know, a 5G network, you know, theoretically you could potentially even broadcast that live as to what, you know, what's happening out on the boat.
You got it. And that takes us maybe, it starts to segue into the whole marketing piece where, you know, how these things are exploding on YouTube and self-promotion and all these different options and influencers, etc. Kind of excites us to think about the ability for particular people to be able to broadcast pretty much live what's happening for them. So,
well, yeah, I mean, there's a TV channel there. There's almost a self-generating TV channel for somebody to be sitting at home, be potentially pulling up feeds from, you know, 1,000 siren cameras out there at any given time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right now, the image to get back at the boat or the angler, there's only a few TV programs that are actually doing that. Some of the higher end fishing channels are doing that, and the only way they're doing it is by actually employing divers to go into the water and film back at them. And we anticipate that we're going to allow everybody to get that visuals and get that experiences and be able to play them back.
So a couple of other quick questions. What's the weight of one of those things? Obviously that fits in your hand, but, you know, what sort of weight are you talking about?
It's not much. This one that I've got in my hand, there's going to be a few more grams have got to go onto it. And this is the engineering like slant on it all. You've got to find an equilibrium between the weight and the stability of it. And the way that we're doing that is obviously having buoyant material on the top and negatively buoyant material on the bottom. So it really wants to sit there nicely. I should say that the original concept going back a few years, I imagine like being this size and being on everybody's lines, but that's right now is not possible. So we've went more towards a niche market, and I've been talking about boats and sport fishing. So it's really blue water fishing we're going to target initially. So the weight of it doesn't actually interfere at all. When there's a serious fish on the end of that line, there's so much tension on it. There's no problem with the weight of it at all. And that's only a consideration until it hits the water, because then obviously it's neutral.
It's floating, yeah. And I guess cost-wise, where are you looking at entering the market in terms of price?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because that's something that deliberating very, very closely right now. In parallel with what I just said about trying to sell it to everybody, that we've came away from that. Mm. One of the reasons is because of the size that it has to be. But secondly, is the actual production cost of it has increased to what we originally imagined it would be. So very much went from, okay, everybody. And by the way, there's about 60 million anglers in the US alone, but squeezing that now to that niche. And that's going to go with the price as well. We're going to target, to begin with, the higher end of the market. In fact, we're probably about the top 20, 15% of the market. The guys and girls with the game boats that live it, this is their life. To get that visual, it doesn't, a few hundred bucks here or there doesn't matter at all. So that's the plan in terms of price. You're probably looking up towards, you know, $500 to $600, I think.
Yeah. Honestly, in the back of my head when I was thinking, you know, when I was looking at it, I was going, you know, that's a $600, $700 product. And again, to me, when I think about pricing and marketing, I go, if someone's prepared to pay $500, they're probably prepared to pay $700. There's not a lot of difference in that. And again, depending on your distribution options, whether you're going through third-party fishing stores, outdoor stores, whatever it is, or whether you're going online, you know, the luxury of things like Afterpay and ZipPay these days, you know, allows people to buy, you know, a $500 to $700 product and put it over 4 months or 6 months or whatever. So it becomes less of a concern and much more of a sort of, I think, an impulse purchase. Like, you know, they see it and they go, I want one of those, and snatch it off the shelf, and price becomes, again, you're in an industry where there's so much passion. You know, people don't go fishing unless they really love it. That's the, you know, every person that I've met that's into fishing is seriously into fishing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's work and fish. That's generally the target that I'm after. And it's so interesting you're saying that. You've actually mentioned a couple of things there that's actually not been said to me before about, you know, the payment methods, etc. But yeah, I'm using myself as the target consumer, basically. And I'm the guy who, you know, kind of struggles to pay $100 for a pair of jeans, but my fishing gear is tens of thousands of dollars. You know, I've got no problem with that. Because I need the gear to work really well. And that's exactly what we're doing with the Karma, even to the point where with the government grant that we've received, and the Australian government's been incredible to us like that. It's really inspiring. You know, that's a manufacturing grant. And I'm even going to the point where considering actually making it, retaining the manufacturer of it in Australia, purely for that high-end stamp. And certainly to begin with, really just targeting the real top bracket of the market.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's lots and lots of opinions as to whether made in Australia or made in China or made in wherever it is, whether that affects people's decision. Funnily enough, I would say most of the time it doesn't, but I would say probably what you're doing and the target market that you're going for, which is initially, would obviously initially be Australians, but then sort of, you know, move out further. I've certainly seen, trying to think of two, I've got a couple of brands in the back of my head who I've spoken to probably over the last few years that were Australian made and have sold really well in the US because they were Australian made.
Yeah.
And certainly in the last sort of few years, I think, you know, the American market pushes back against, you know, Chinese made, Chinese manufactured products.
Yeah.
And are much more accepting of Australian products. I guess the challenge for you is finding the price point. It's like, you know, if all of a sudden a Chinese product is half the price and you kind of go, well, is this going to affect our distribution, our marketplace? But again, once again, I go, because of the passion, ingrained passion in your marketplace, you know, whether you're talking about $500 or $700 for a product, I think they would step up to the more expensive price knowing that it was made in Australia.
Yeah,
but that's
great to hear.
That's a survey size of one, so please don't make any decisions on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a reasonable amount of market research. In fact, we actually went to the States in 2019, went to the biggest recreational fishing expo. It's held in Florida. It's called ICAST. It's actually just kicking off right now.
Right.
So yeah, we bit the bullet and went early, you know, compared to where the product was. But we went early to effectively just feel it and understand, like, if we want something here or not. And we set up a little stand and over 3 days chatted to the US market. And I really came home from that saying, right, this is on. We can pretty much charge what we want to for this, you know, if you market it to the right person. So yeah, in a nutshell, Simon, that's where the thought is right now, the kind of sales strategy right now. It's let's go niche, let's go real high end, and with a nice margin on it to begin with.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point that you've made there. Going early on to an expo and standing there and presenting an idea that I guess was just in your head at that point, or maybe have a very, very early prototype. And I wonder whether you would have come this far down the road if you hadn't done that. I mean, you might still have the idea in your head and you might still be working on it. But, you know, for you to have, you know, whatever, 100 people say, take my money, you know, the Futurama fry gift, just take my money. I guess that's the best market research you could have possibly done for the product.
Yeah, I think so. I think so as well. It was definitely worth it. Like I say, we came back from there with a real spring in our step. And then, you know, in all honesty, the development of it has definitely had its challenges and still does. Like we're not out of the woods yet, but the knocks you take on that are kind of countered by one, just the grit and passion that's in me to make this happen. We came so far now that I'm going to make it happen. But also that consumer feedback from that expo, for example, we did one in the Gold Coast as well, a bit smaller, but same reaction. And then if you just look at, you know, the social media will be a big play for us. And we're like at 10,000 people following us just organically across our platforms without any effort. So I'm pretty sure I can times 100 that if we put our minds to it and a bit of finance as well.
Yeah.
You know, and you, like I say, you've got that there's 12,000 fishing charters on the internet as well. So you know, this it's an amazing like offer to those guys. It's been the same offering forever from fishing charters, but now we think we can put one of these on each charter and they can actually give back to the consumers in terms of video footage. The same idea as like roller coasters, if you like, or theme parks sell back that experience to the visitors that come to their parks.
I guess when I look at the product and when I sort of first looked at it 3-4 weeks ago when I sort of came back across your website, it's a self-marketing product, you know, in the same sense that, you know, something like GoPro was, you know, GoPro, the original kind of action camera, you know, all you needed to do was get some footage of GoPro people, you know, BMXing down mountain trails or jumping off, you know, skiing down things or hang gliding or whatever it was, and all of a sudden everybody wanted a GoPro, even if they were only ever going to go do these things once. It just became something that you want. So it's kind of a self-marketing product. I guess probably the two challenges that I would look at, you know, and I've had this conversation with another client in the past few weeks, is your capacity to deliver enough product in a short space of time. Because the challenge for you guys is it could go absolutely bonkers, you know, and it could go bonkers very, very quickly. And if you don't have the stock and you don't have the product, you know, there's a challenge there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's challenge number one. I guess the second challenge, which would be interesting, and I'm sure you've worked through this, is the problem GoPro had is that once someone has a GoPro, they don't necessarily buy anything else off you. It's about finding that kind of ongoing revenue to take the business from what could be a successful business to a, you know, a unicorn type business.
Yeah.
So there's two questions there, two challenges. Keen to kind of hear your feedback on those.
Yeah. No, great challenges. Now, firstly, in terms of the demand for it, you're right. If this really took off, that could potentially be a real problem. It would be an awesome problem as well.
Yeah. It's a great problem to have. Yes.
I invite that challenge and problem. That's half the answer to that one. The other half of the answer is around about, you know, getting to Kickstarter and its equivalents to really get a real market sample of who's willing to put, you know, their hand in their pocket and buy this. And so that'll be the next level, if you like, of market testing. Because as we all know, you know, kind of making predictions on sales without actually having any sales is a dangerous thing. So that'll be my sample for that. And then I've got, there's plenty of interested people, I think, that would help us out financially and with facilities, so long as we de-risk this product. So that's a bridge that we'll cross when we get there. And then it's consumers returning for, you know, second buys, if you like. And that's a good point as well, because we want to build this thing to complement what I said earlier, like, you know, really strongly. We don't want it to fail. It needs to be a product that, you know, people promote because of its durability and its functionality. But in all honesty, for over the next 10 years, I really see there being so much options with the camera and different markets to or expansion of the market to continue to explore. So we'll go top 10%, but over time, if production ramps like you were suggesting it could, then therefore I feel like the cost could be reduced in terms of the amount that you're actually producing. So just economies of scale, the size will be reduced, and we can continue to reinvent this. Although we've put, there's literally years of development in this camera, you just got to look at the GoPro story to see the iterations that they come up with. So I know that just by having the first rev out in the market there, the information that we'll get back, the consumer feedback, will allow us to continue to tweak this and make it better and better. So I guess that's not the most solid response, but like I say, I don't think we can try to solve the entire equation without knowing exactly what it is. And I think it's going to be a progressive thing.
I think when you look at, I mean, the obvious thing that sort of sticks in my head now, and again, it's for further down the line, is that you are essentially creating a media company here in a roundabout way. You know, yes, there's a product, obviously there's a product development component of, you know, what you're doing. But if you think about it from another angle, you're potentially creating a media company because you are creating thousands and thousands of hours, or you could be creating thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of fishing, you know, footage on a daily basis globally. So if you kind of take that, if you take that thought and go, the obvious one to me would be a YouTube channel that carries advertising. And again, you only have to look at a number of YouTube channels, successful YouTube channels for much, you know, niche products and niche subjects like yours. Yep. I saw a video of one the other day from a guy on TikTok was showing how much he made. And he was creating an advertising $6,000 to $10,000 a day in advertising from a YouTube channel. Now, you've got that. You know, obviously there's some permissions that you need to work through in terms of people giving you the footage to allow you to generate revenue and blah, 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 blah. Maybe there's a profit share option in there and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's, from your perspective, is go, yeah, we're a product company, but we're also about to become a media company, and we need to think like a media company and work out that perhaps this thing in your hand isn't what's going to make all the money, but the content that produces is going to potentially make the money for you.
Definitely. Definitely. And some of the more experienced guys in the investment industry, let's say, and along with people like yourself that are immediately seeing that. I've had lots of conversations that don't necessarily focus on the hardware at all. They're like, that's purely an enabler to everything else. The data, the actual video content, exactly like you're homing in on, Simon. So totally agree with what you're saying. That it kind of gives me goosebumps thinking about it. but I certainly know that, you know, for me, I've been burned along this journey a couple of times with the actual development. And so I know the enabler to allow us to really get excited about all those other components. So focus is right on that for the time being. And then you beat me too on the GoPro example. If you look at their story, and I'm sure you have, like their advertisement investment for the market cap that they have is incredibly low versus other companies of equivalent market cap. And it's all down to that user generated content. So with our cameras, we can provide a perspective that's never been seen before. And we've got high hopes that we can carve out, you know, or use a bit of that magic dust that GoPro had.
Look, mate, you've got a life-changing product there. And, you know, obviously life-changing for you guys is that this is the sort of thing that, you know, gets you a foothold in a global industry and makes you, you know, turns you into a big brand and probably turns you into a big brand quickly as well. But what's the timeline on this? Where are you, you know, where should we start seeing this, you know, in the marketplace, or where should people be, you know, putting in their calendar when they can start buying these?
Yeah, nah, thanks for the question. I've been asked that a few times.
I'd imagine, yeah.
And I've gave a few dates that I haven't hit. So there's a bit of experience talking here, and I'm going to be a little bit cautious. But now we had a step change with the government backing. It's allowed us to get, you know, very, very serious with an extremely competent design house who are max on this right now. They're absolutely full-time on it. And so, you know, specific dates, I'm definitely wary about that. But, you know, we've got a bit of timeline in my head, and I'm planning for 2022 to be a big year.
Awesome. And I also noticed you on your website, we have a mutual friend as your lawyer, your IP lawyer, Bradley. He's done some work for us in the past, and or some of our clients actually as well. I guess my final question, how important for you has it been to make sure that this is protected all the way through?
Yeah. Well, vital. And I talk about like milestones that give you encouragement when you're maybe facing some disappointments along the journey as well. And that's a massive one. So like that day that I came back from offshore and I started to do a bit of searching for something like this on the internet, couldn't find it. But that verification, like professional verification that, okay, this has not been done before, is absolutely massive. And then to actually land the patent itself. So we've actually got the 20-year patent in Australia. Nobody else can produce a double lens camera in fishing with the same patents pending for North America and Europe. And Bradley's been integral to that. But if I had to list like the top five kind of milestones that we've achieved along the journey, that's in there. Receiving that confirmation is definitely in there. And then I'm not naive. You know, I've done a fair bit of research on what patents mean and the challenges you may still get. But again, that's if we're being duplicated, sure, it's a pain and sure, we'll have to fight that. And you know, that costs money as well. But it's a compliment as well. If it's being imitated, then that's a compliment. And like I say about the quality of the product, the same as, I'll keep going back to the whole GoPro thing. And for me, I can go into the city and there's a variety of selections of action cameras there, but I'll only buy a GoPro.
Yeah.
We plan to do the same thing for our high bracket consumers and make this the best product. So even if it is duplicated out of Asia per se, it won't have the same durability and quality that we're producing. Yeah. I'm going to make sure of that.
Yeah. Last question. You did mention the government in terms of them helping you from a manufacturing. Was that the Queensland government or the federal government?
It's the federal government, yeah.
Okay.
Through a branch of them, the Advanced Manufacturing Group.
Okay. And was that a complicated process? Is that, you know, it's federal government. I guess it's never going to be easy, but, you know, how was that?
Yeah, it's not overly. And I must say, like, sometimes things just happen and then sometimes, you go away down rabbit holes and you never get anywhere. But this was one of those times it just happened. I got myself out and about into the startup kind of community, ended up in a pub, as you often do in that community.
Yeah.
And just got some advice off an experienced gent that was part of a particular session that night who mentioned that there's a manufacturing grant. I put in my application for that. I showed up to meet the rep, demonstrated the actual hardware that we had. Yeah. And it went from there. It went from there. So a few months later, we had an agreement to get that funding. Just like I say, it's been a step change. That's really made a difference.
Mate, thank you very much for your time today. You know, it's most of the people I speak to on this podcast are sort of much, further down the journey. They're already making revenue, but it's fascinating to hear the story behind what I think is a unique product, or, you know, maybe not wholly unique, but certainly unique in its application and its target market. And I think it's going to be hugely successful. So thank you very much for joining me, and good luck, and no doubt we'll be talking in the future.
And thank you, Simon, for your time and some of those prompts as well. It's always good to have these conversations. You always learn something, so really appreciate it. And we just encourage anybody that's listening to this who's got any interest just to check out the website, like you mentioned, sirencameras.com, or just type in Siren Cameras to any of the social media handles and there's some content there just to check out.
Yeah, definitely go and follow you. Everyone out there, go and follow you. Even if you don't like fishing or you're not into fishing, go and follow you on Instagram, because I imagine it's going to be a fascinating journey. And TikTok is your next one, Phil. The fishing TikTok is massive. Is absolutely massive at the moment. So
I've had a couple of goes. There's a couple of videos on there, but I'm no expert, that's for sure. So I might be tapping you up.
Okay, TikTok is that's an interesting platform. But mate, the organic reach on TikTok at the moment, especially for a real niche product like you, is huge. So anyway, mate, thank you very much. Have a good rest of your day. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you, Simon. Take care.
That's pretty much it from me for episode 111 of the SEMO Marketing Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Please tune in again next time.